The Brad Sessmatt Show, broadcasting live from the Skyview Network studios.
You know, I was starting to get worried that we might be counter-programming against the Arizona Diamondbacks on this fine Wednesday morning. D-backs 19 innings last night against the St. Louis Cardinals. It was, I want to say, like 2014, I was at a game. And at that time, it was the longest game at Chase Field history. And it was against the St. Louis Cardinals. And I love him, Kellen Olson, over at Arizona Sports. Does a great job covering the Suns, among other sports. But I feel like I always learn something when I read his work. He just blew it up. He was the one that jinxed this game. Because in the eighth inning, he tweeted out that he had pretty much his recap pretty much entirely done. And let's see how it gets ruined. And then it becomes the longest game in Chase Field history. Some incredible numbers. I'm Jordan Hamm, by the way, filling in for the big guy here on Sports 360 AZ. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at sports360az.com. But just records were broken all over the place here last night for the Arizona Diamondbacks. 19 innings, 6 hours, 53 minutes. That was the longest game in Chase Field history. Second longest in team history, 7 hours and 6 minutes. So we're going to get into some of that and why this happened after the Diamondbacks are already out of it and what that says about the team. Going to talk about ASU, going to have a couple important guests coming on to break some things down, and we are going to kick things off here with our rundown, brought to you by Sagicor Now. Sagicor Now, protect what matters most. We're having Catherine Fitzgerald on, AZ Central Sports, does a great job covering the Cardinals, among other teams, and one of the best social media follows out there. We break down her in-game tweets. I think I want this to become a regular thing, especially with the home games when she's just in her element, because she is one of the most insightful, funniest Twitter follows there is. And so we break some of that down. We're going to talk Cardinals looking ahead a little bit to the Seahawks. Where can they improve? What can they do to get win number one? And will that be happening against the Seahawks? We're going to go kind of in-depth on that. And then Will Bohr, MLB.com, MLB Pipeline, talking Arizona Fall League. Guys, this is like one of the best-kept secrets in baseball is the Arizona Fall League. You have some of the top players, top prospects in baseball, all coming right here and playing in pretty much empty stadiums, spring training stadiums, and you can get in for like $6. And I remember distinctly, more than a couple years ago now, going and watching Bryce Harper play before when he was just a high-profile prospect, and that was it. All he had done so far on a baseball field is just hit a bunch of baseballs really, really far at Southern Nevada College. But I got to watch him in a championship game for like $4 or $5. It's something ridiculous like that. So I encourage everyone, kind of go check out what's going on with the Arizona Fall League. See if you can get to a game. They're really fun. They have a spring training atmosphere. You know, pitchers don't go too deep into the games. You see a lot of players, but there's a ton of talent, and it truly is like tomorrow's stars today. So highly encourage checking that out. Will helps us kind of break down this year's class of the Arizona Fall League, plus the Arizona ties with the Diamondbacks. And then there are a couple locals also playing in there. So he helps us kind of get through all of that. But circling back with this Diamondbacks game. So September 23rd, 2019, they got eliminated from playoff contention. September 2018... they got eliminated from playoff contention. So I have a feeling the Diamondbacks really hate September 23rd. But that happens, and then they follow up that next game with the longest game at Chase Field history. And they easily could have rolled over against a team, a St. Louis team, that has already clinched a playoff spot, is fighting for the NL Central, but they didn't. And they fought this one out, and listen, the bulk of my coverage of the Diamondbacks has come in the Torrey Lovello, Mike Hazen era. That's really when Brad kind of turned me loose and said, go cover the Diamondbacks. A little bit the year prior, you know, with Chip Hale. But I think that just speaks to the culture that this, in three seasons, almost three completed seasons now, that Torrey Lovello has built, that Mike Hazen has built, that these are guys that have come in and they very easily could have turned it in. Adam Jones has played so much baseball in his life that he could have, whatever. You know, there are young guys who, you know, are probably in pretty good positions to, you know, make the team and have a future with this ball club. And, But no, they kept fighting it out to the longest baseball game in Chase Field history. And they were just minutes away from being the longest Diamondbacks game in franchise history. So, you know, one of the things that Lovello, right when he came in, he talked about, you know, building that culture, that winning culture that both him and Mike Hazen had when they were in Boston, and talking about, you know, loving his players and fighting for them. This is example number one you should point to. Yeah, the wild card run in 2017 was great, making it to the NLDS. And last year, when you're in first place for much of the year and then narrowly missed the postseason, and this, a group that overachieved and played some really good baseball despite some of their key figures moving on, but they're still fighting it out till the bitter end. And I think that should say something about the Diamondbacks and about you know, what is being built there. And that's something you can't quantify on a box score. But you have a bunch of guys that clearly care. And I think that the club is in a very good place. On Monday night when they got eliminated, I wrote a very long column, so bear with me, just about where the team is at, you know, literally a year apart. I wrote two separate columns. One in 2018 when they got eliminated, that it's, look at all these questions looming over the Diamondbacks. What's going to happen with Pat Corbin? What's going to happen with A.J. Pollock, Paul Goldschmidt, Zach Greinke, can Taijuan Walker bounce back? All of these questions were in my head of just like, this is so much uncertainty. Are the Diamondbacks going to be a one-hit wonder under this regime? Or how are they going to turn the page to the next generation of the Diamondbacks? And I feel like they've done that. And they've remained competitive. And now they're in a position this offseason to continue to build on that. They have Luke Weaver, Carson Kelly, multiple years of control. You know, you have your everyday starting catcher good to go. He has played so well this year that the Diamondbacks abandoned the three catcher system. And that was something that was a staple of the Diamondbacks the first 2 years under Lovello and Mike Hazen. But Carson Kelly showed them enough that he's like, yeah, I can be the everyday guy and mix in with Alex Avila. Luke Weaver, if he's healthy, I think he's a top three starter in that rotation. Easy. He pitched very well for the Diamondbacks when healthy. Nick Ahmed had his best offensive season he's ever had, an elite defender. Ketel Marte is a star in the making. Eduardo Escobar is, you can say the same for him. And, you know, Christian Walker stepped up nicely to be a more than suitable first baseman. And now that he's had a full year under his belt, I think a lot of those growing pains are going to be behind him. And he can take those next steps. Is he going to be Paul Goldschmidt? I don't think so. But you have a pretty darn good option at first base. Now, there are questions in the outfield. There are going to be questions in the bullpen. I personally think there might be some questions in the rotation. You have some options, but where do you want to go with the number one spot? Is Robbie Ray going to be a part of that future? He was one of the rumored trade pieces at the deadline. It wasn't Zach Greinke. Zach Greinke came out of nowhere. It was Robbie Ray. Now, could that continue if they continue to acquire really good prospects and rebuild this, or just really good talent as Robbie Ray is starting to approach towards the end of his contract with the Diamondbacks? Or do they extend him long term? They now have the money where they don't have to get creative by necessity. Now Mike Hazen can get creative because he's a good general manager, and that's just icing on the cake. It's not, well, we don't quite have the money to get a full-fledged, you know, addition, so let's go in the bargain bin and find some guys where they were also very successful. But now, I think moving forward, they have some money to work with. And I think it's an exciting time to be a Diamondbacks fan. And this response from last night, I think, should excite Diamondback fans that much more. That you have a team that cares this much, and they're in a position long-term, and they were able to turn that page because the window had closed. It had. People don't want to admit that, but the window had closed when Pat Corbin walked out the door, when AJ Pollock walked out the door, and Paul Goldschmidt had 1 year remaining, and the extension talks had dissolved pretty much. That window was starting to close. And rather than it fully shut and Mike Hazen trying to build it up from there, he made an unpopular, but I feel correct decision to move on from Paul Goldschmidt, bring in two very good up-and-coming players, and a prospect that is getting rave reviews right now, and acquire a draft pick, and then make some moves throughout the year to continue to acquire young talent and set them up so it's a sustainable thing. And they were able to remain competitive while losing those big names, and they also improved the minor league system. Like, leaps and bounds. Whether it be from the draft or the trades on deadline day. Now the Diamondbacks have a top 10 farm system. And I know Mike Hazen doesn't care about the rankings of those farm systems, but it's impossible to argue against that this is a much improved farm system than when he took it over. So I think Diamondbacks are in a very good spot right now. And it was encouraging to wake up to 14 Pat Kurish emails from the Diamondbacks communications office on various notes from the game, because the game went so long because they still care even though they're eliminated from the postseason. So they're in a really good spot. And looking forward to, I think this is going to be a really important offseason, and one where I think the Diamondbacks are going to be players. And they haven't necessarily been able to do that while Mike Hazen has been here. And I'm excited to see. He has that one hand that was tied behind his back, that's now free. And he can really get to work, and that front office can get to work. So looking forward to seeing where they go with that and covering these future teams on what they can do. Coming up next, we're going to have Catherine Fitzgerald breaking down her Twitter, her social media. It's one of the best. Also talking about where the Cardinals are right now and previewing a little bit with the Seahawks. That's coming up next on the Brad Sessmatt Show. Welcome back to the Brad Sessmatt Show. I'm Jordan Hamm. Now, as we further break down what the Cardinals, where they're at currently, I wanted to bring on Catherine Fitzgerald of AZ Central Sports. Does a great job covering the team. Also, one of my favorite Twitter follows. So, of course, we're going to dive deep into her tweets during the game and also get some nuts and bolts on what's going on with the Cardinals right now and moving forward as they take on the Seahawks. Catherine, thanks so much for joining us.
Of course. Thanks for having me.
So wanted to jump directly in to the Twitter thread because you were, as always, very informative, very entertaining throughout the game. So wanted to jump through a couple of these tweets and get your thoughts on them. With the NFL's ban on pyrotechnics, the Cardinals will not have their typical flames on the field for player intros, heavily affecting my pregame boomerangs. Then you later quote tweeted, looking like a setup for a fancy light show instead. Perhaps the boomerangs can be salvaged after all. My question to you is, if you were to come out on an NFL field for pregame, what would you want your pregame intro to be?
Oh, this is hard because I think I would need probably a month to prepare this fully so it could be as majestic as possible.
All the choreography in place.
Yeah, definitely like a gospel choir. As many have been told, my first screen name was Firework Lover 24. So that's embarrassing, but also probably some fireworks mixed in. Maybe like some waterfalls, some, I don't know, animals. I'm going to start Googling more into this because it is perhaps the most important question.
For me, I'm going to keep it real simple. The entire team comes out with me, but we all have Heelys. So at one point, we're running out, and then all of a sudden, in unison, just we all slide on our heelys. So
that would be good. A little tricky on the turf. So I think you might need, like, whatever they use for mountain bikes, but for your heelys.
There we go. And, you know, the Cardinals, they roll in their field. I'm sure they can roll in a surface for us to slide onto as well.
True. This is not too big an ask.
Next tweet, Kyle Allen completes a 33-yard pass despite the Cardinals having 12 men on the field. If there is a strange alternate NFL league like the XFL, what weird advantage should they throw in on particular plays, whether it be an extra man on the field, you know, something to help kind of sway things where the strategery can get put in place?
I would definitely draw on my experience in backyard football with the Sonic Boom play, where you power up and there's a play where just kind of everyone falls to the ground and looks like, I don't know, like a bug on their back, and they wiggle around and you just kind of waltz down the field. There's something like that.
Okay. I was going to go, again, feet related. I was going to have one team for a couple of plays play with one shoe on. Because if you're playing up in Seattle, okay, then you have to deal with, like, wet feet or one wet foot.
Ooh,
and one dry
socks.
One. Yeah. So having to deal with that, I feel like the mental anguish would give a real advantage to the other team on that.
Yes, you are a monster for that.
Next tweet, Kyler Murray is picked off by Dante Jackson. Panthers bring it back, get it back two plays later, and we'll start on Arizona's 22. Kyler did get credited with the tackle. He's now a triple threat. What's your triple threat?
Well, tweeting's one.
Yes.
Maybe all of them. Let's see. I'm good at that. I can do a pretty good cartwheel from my left side. My right side's a little trickier.
People don't need to know the other side.
Yeah, you can cut that out. let's see. Cartwheels, plural. Tweeting. And probably bad dancing.
There we go. That sounds like a dynamic triple threat to me. Talking to Catherine Fitzgerald of AZ Central Sports. All right, let's talk some serious Cardinals stuff now. When you looked at the Cardinals with that opening drive, I felt like they might have turned a page, got off to a hot start. That's something we hadn't seen out of them the first two games, and I felt like it might have been sustained for the rest of the game. That obviously didn't happen. But what was just your overall first reaction to that opening drive and kind of how hot they were able to come out and really hit the ground running?
Yeah, I think especially after the first 2 weeks of the season, they kind of needed to get something going early when they were starting. It almost seemed like the theme of they can't get anything going in the first half at all, and now they're trying to come back. So I thought they pieced together a lot of good stuff on that. Kyler, forget exactly how many passes he strung together, but he looks pretty sharp. He was running some too. So you saw a little bit more creativity there. I know later in the game, sometimes it felt like he was kind of running because he had to, like he was scrambling, trying to escape, but it felt a lot more deliberate on that opening drive. I think on that drive itself, he maybe passed like his total rushing yards from the previous two games mm-hmm. in one drive. So when you see that, you're like, okay, they're starting to piece things together. They're starting to make it work. Like you mentioned, they did not sustain it for the rest of the game, but some good signs there.
With the time of possession, I looked at that, what they're averaging versus what the defense is facing. Their time of possession, 28 minutes, the opponent's 35. Do you think that's a cause for concern, or might be a byproduct of trying to run so many plays so quickly and having a few of those quick drives get just taken out very quickly on a three and out?
Yeah, I definitely think it's a byproduct where with Cliff Kingsbury's offense, they're trying to go fast, and sometimes it's, you know, if they're going three and out, it's just not working. The defense is going to be on the field a little bit longer. They know that. They have said they feel ready for it. Obviously, defense is still a bit of a problem with this team, but I don't think time of possession is a cause for concern, considering that's just kind of how this team is built to operate.
Looking ahead to the Seahawks, and we see Russell Wilson under center, having had a great game last week. I know that him and Lamar Jackson are two very different players, but dual threat quarterbacks. Do you think, what do you think the Cardinals can take away from matching up against Lamar Jackson 2 weeks ago that could potentially help them with Russell Wilson this upcoming week?
Yeah, I mean, I think they're still kind of, as they're looking at the defense as a whole when they're going up against any team, there's still kind of a lot of work to do there. They gave up 38 points to the Panthers after having a stronger performance against the Ravens, kind of holding Lamar Jackson after he had had that breakout week, which obviously was against the Dolphins. So have to kind of consider that when you're thinking about how much the Ravens had done previously. But yeah, I think a big thing is they're still really trying to figure out what to do against opposing tight ends. That's something that Cliff Kingsbury said, pretty much everything is on the table. So, you know, when Russell Wilson's looking downfield, trying to take away anything there. Something I thought was really interesting is Will Dissly, their tight end for the Seahawks. He last season cut short by injury, but he had his biggest gain against the Broncos, then coached by Vance Joseph. So there's some familiarity with him, even for coaches that were not on the Cardinals last season. So I think, you know, just kind of trying to get as much of the defense on the same page after what was a pretty rough recent outing.
Catherine, thanks so much for the insight and for having some fun with us. We appreciate it. And I'm sure we'll be hearing from you here soon.
Sounds good. I'm going to go plan my light show. So looking forward to that.
We'll have meetings later and touch base on that. So, all right. Thanks, Catherine. All right, that is Catherine Fitzgerald, AZ Central sports reporter. Again, does a phenomenal job covering the Cardinals, covering among other teams throughout the Valley. But she's really done a great job with this NFL team here in Phoenix, and appreciate all of her insight. And again, she is just always fun to talk to and break down her Twitter. So kind of want to make that a regular thing where we dissect her observations during the game. So a lot of fun. Appreciate her jumping on, and we're going to take a quick break. Well, each and every fall, there is one of baseball's best-kept secrets right here in Arizona. It's the Arizona Fall League. Some of the top talent and stars of tomorrow are playing all over the state. And you can check them out at very affordable prices, but wanted to break some of those guys down. So wanted to bring on Will Bohr. He's a reporter for MLB and MLB Pipeline. Will, thanks so much for joining us.
Yeah, no problem. Thanks for having me. And you were right about best kept secret. The Fall League is a ton of fun and not all that well known.
And you're one of the hardest working baseball writers I know. You even got locked in the stadium in the first week of the Fall League. Is that right?
Yes, that was right. I had a, we'll call it a situation Saturday. Got locked in Peoria Sports Complex. Made it out okay. Had to get a little bit creative, but all's well now. It's officially now my second time being locked in a stadium.
So how did you get out of said stadium?
I found a trash can on the concourse, kind of dragged it over to the gate, climbed up on the trash can, and then hopped to the fence. I was telling friends and everything, though, the first time I got locked in a stadium was like 2 years ago, and I ripped my pants on my escape route. So this time, everything intact, nothing ripped, whatever. So I'm getting better stadium jailbreak.
Yeah, you were resourceful and clearly getting better at it. That's a sign of a good reporter. So with this league, I remember, you know, a couple of years ago watching a very, very young Bryce Harper playing in the Fall League, and I think I got in for like $4 or something like that. How beneficial is it for having these top guys come in and participate in the Arizona Fall League when it comes to their development?
Yeah, I think it's huge because not only do they get, like, the simple obvious fact is they just get more reps. You know, the season ended a couple weeks ago. Their season extends by 6 weeks. And whether they played a full year and they're just getting 6 more weeks, or whether they missed time for injury and are, you know, making up for that, either way, more reps are always good. But I think the other benefit that this league provides is these players, since it's the best of the best from all the various organizations, you're getting those additional reps against top flight competition. And you're also just getting to interact with different people, whether it's different players, different coaches, et cetera, et cetera. You're getting more exposure to different techniques, different schools of thought, all that sort of stuff. So that really helps you as well, because maybe a different coach from a different organization just sees something a little bit different. Or you can talk to, you know, a fellow player who throws a ball this way, and you know, all those little things really start to add up.
Now, I know the roster reveals are always highly anticipated. I was even messaging you, you know, prior to the announcement, if you had an idea on, you know, when we would know who's going to be participating in it. With this year's class, how do you think it stacks up to previous years of the Arizona Fall League?
It's really good. I like it. It's funny. When you see the rosters, you know, we judge based on how many of top 100 prospects and how many of a team's top prospects are on their rosters and stuff. But it's also fun for me to go back a year later or 2 years later and look at the rosters and be like, okay, wow, like maybe that roster was really good, or even just like it was really cool to see him. Like, you know, last year Pete Alonso was here and now he's out there dropping 50 homers. So it's cool like that. But yeah, I think these rosters are really good. It came out with 20 top 100 prospects and then some roster changes. I think we were down to 18, but still a really solid number, and there's still a lot of talent out there every single night.
Now, if there's a baseball fan that wants to see the best of the best of this group, if there are a couple headliners within this this year's class, who would you say those guys are?
Yeah, I mean, Joe Adell, he's off to a slow start here. He's hitting under like 100, but I assume he's gonna, you know, start figuring out soon. He's our number 5 overall prospect. You don't obviously earn that ranking lightly. Royce Lewis, who's our number 9 overall prospect, he's here. He's playing on the Salt River team. He's been really impressive so far. He's hit a couple homers. Cool thing with him is he's a shortstop, but wants to work on some like versatility. So I've actually seen him. I haven't actually seen him play shortstop. I've seen him play 2 games at third and a game in center as well. Jared Kelenic, Mariners top prospects here. He had his wisdom teeth removed right after the season, so I haven't seen him in action yet. I don't think he's played, but he's here and he's going to play. He's just, you know, needs some swelling to go down in his cheeks and all that. And then Forrest Whitley, one of our top pitching prospects, he was here last year and he threw really well here. And he had a rough season, some injuries, command issues, but he looked good in his first fall league start the other day. Struck out 6 over like 4 innings, I believe. So he'd be a fun one to watch as well.
Talking to Will Bohr, reporter for MLB and MLB Pipeline. Now, the Diamondbacks are well represented, like they usually are in the Arizona Fall League. You know, when you look at the group, Seth Beer, Geraldo Perdomo, Jake McCarthy, a couple of the top guys in there. Who's jumped out the most to you from these Arizona organizations that are participating in the Arizona Fall League?
I think it's Perdomo. He just surprised me. I hadn't seen him in person, so the first thing that kind of jumped off the page when I watched him take BP was just his size. He was just bigger than I thought. But also, he's hit better. He's hit really well. I've really been impressed with him at the plate. Obviously, it's only 5 games so far, so a small sample size. But he is hitting 300. He's stolen a couple bases, so that's you know, shown some speed. I really liked what I've seen from him. It's been a good showing so far. I'm curious to see if he keeps it up throughout the rest of the fall league.
And I saw you write a couple of days ago, Matt Peacock, a guy that isn't highly ranked within the Diamondbacks organization, but a guy that you really wanted to see as well.
Yeah, I saw him throw the other day. He's made 1 start. It was an okay start. There were some flashes of stuff. So I liked what I saw, but also it looks like someone that needs to work on some consistency but could be there. It was the kind of guy that, like, you know, a batter here, I'd be like, oh, that was some really good stuff, and you kind of see stuff flash. and he'd walk the next guy or whatever, stuff like that. But as far as someone who isn't highly ranked and doesn't have a ton of buzz generating around him, he definitely looked like someone that has the stuff necessary to succeed, and someone that if he does well here over these next, 5 weeks now, could really boost his stock.
Now, I know everybody is different in their kind of prospect journey and, you know, getting to the major leagues, but who among this Diamondbacks group could fans see at the major league level in the next year or two?
Well, I guess if he does well, possibly Peacock, especially because, one, he was already Double-A, and then two, because, you know, pitchers go up and down so often, so that's kind of a easy, cheap call, because that could be, you know, a spot start or just relieving or whatever. I think Beer has a chance late next year. That might be kind of pushing it, but if he has a big year and then September call-up sort of thing. Otherwise, I'm trying to think if I might be forgetting a Diamondback, but otherwise I think we might be, with the rest of them, might be talking 2021.
Okay, gotcha. With, you know, there are some other locals here participating in it, not just within the Diamondbacks organization, but Ryan Castellani of the Rockies played his prep ball at Brophy College Prep. Just how have you seen him develop over the past couple of years? And I feel like he's a name that pops up whenever you're talking Rockies prospects to be one of the, you know, top 10, top 15 guys within that system.
Yeah, he's looked good. I saw him the other night, and he threw two innings. A lot of pitchers here don't throw. It's just to get work in, so maybe they'll develop some stuff. It's sort of like spring training in that element. Like, there's not a lot of starters going six or seven. So don't be alarmed when I say all these guys are throwing two and three innings. So, yeah, he threw two innings the other night, you know, scoreless, struck out. I don't have the numbers in front of me, but want to say like four or five. Yeah, he had kind of a rough year, both in terms of production and injuries, which are probably related. So it was just kind of good to see him healthy, because he hadn't pitched since June. He had a surgery for something on his elbow, and so he hadn't pitched since June. So him coming out here is just kind of to make up for lost time, and he looked good to go the other night when I saw him. That was a few days ago, so he's probably getting ready to throw again either today or tomorrow. But it's just good to see him healthy, see what he does. We kind of know who he is as a pitcher. He's got good stuff. It's just a matter of building up those innings and then maybe competing for a spot in spring training next year.
He is William Bohr, reporter for MLB and MLB Pipeline. You can follow him at WBohr. Will, thanks so much for the time and the insight.
Yeah, no problem. Happy to do it.
And this is the Brad Sesmatt Show. We're wrapping up a busy Brad Sesmatt Show here. We're going to talk some ASU football. Jordan Hamm filling in for the big guy. Make sure to check out all of our content on sports360az.com. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram at sports360az. Special thanks to Catherine Fitzgerald and Will Bohr for joining us, talking about Cardinals and the Arizona Fall League. So with ASU, obviously a lot of air has come out of the balloon after a tough loss to Colorado. They couldn't get a pass rush. That was very evident. Steven Montez picked them apart. And now looking ahead to this Cal game, it's on a Friday night. It's on the road. A lot of weird things can happen with those two elements. But right now, Cal, the only unbeaten team in the Pac-12. But when you look at these games and their number 15 ranking, I feel like there is an opportunity here for ASU. They're beginning the toughest stretch of their season right now, because they have them, they have Utah coming up, Washington State, USC, all in a, you know, over the next month or so. Like, that's going to be a tough span for them. And I don't know how many wins they're going to get out of that, but I think, more confident than the public perception with this game for the Sun Devils. Cal so far, 4-0 on the year. They beat UC Davis 27-13. They went to Washington and won 20-19, beat North Texas 23-17, and then Ole Miss 28-20 in a last-second thriller where it was up against the goal line. Now, the one thing we've learned about these Justin Wilcox Cal teams is they aren't going to give up many points. They aren't going to give up many opportunities. The Sun Devils have played against that type of team already in Michigan State, and they were able to do just enough offensively to win that game. Now, the defense is going to have a similar performance and put that Colorado game behind them. They need to find a pass rush. That's going to be the key here. But when you look, UC Davis, Cal should take care of UC Davis by a lot more than 14. UC Davis is a good program. A lot of Arizona guys go up there, but they should take care. Cal should take care of business. This Washington win, obviously a big win. Anytime you can go into Seattle and get a W, but this was that game where it continually was delayed, and it didn't really wrap up until about 1 a.m. I was DMing with Brandon Huffman of 24/7 Sports because he was at that game, and he's just like, another delay. It got to the point where the press box was out of coffee. That's how long of a delay and game that took. So you can kind of take that game with a grain of salt, because just it was a lot of weird elements. And credit to Cal for being able to overcome that and eke out a victory against Washington. But I think if Cal plays Washington again in a straight up game, I think more than likely Washington's going to take care of business. You follow that up with a 6-point win against North Texas. Again, like, what are you doing keeping that game that close? And then beat a good Ole Miss team on the road in a tough environment, 8-point win, and a controversial win because there were some clock issues at the end of the game. Again, backs were against the wall. They were able to hold. So this team has played a lot of close games. ASU has played a lot of close games. These are two teams I feel like that are going to be very comfortable just slugging it out and being within a couple points of each other. But I think they're more vulnerable than people are giving them credit for, and we'll see how ASU bounces back. Again, this is a young team, so you're going to get the highs of the Michigan State win where the defense just shut the door. And the offense was able to do just enough, and Jaden Daniels was able to have ice water in his veins on fourth down and, 13 and picks up 15. The following game, you saw things open up for Jaden Daniels, and he was throwing the ball downfield and did pretty darn well. One bad throw, but the defense could not get into the backfield. That's going to have to change. And I know Tyler Johnson was a big part of that, and his injury, not sure his status for this week, but they've been in a lot of close games as well. You know, when you look at what they've done so far this year, you know, on the other side of the coin, I could say the same thing I was saying about, you know, a close North Texas win, a close UC Davis win with a Sacramento State win that the Sun Devils have 19-7. So, but I think the key here is going to be getting the ball to Brandon Ayuk and getting Eno Benjamin going. Eno Benjamin, this week last year, was his real coming out party. That's when he set the game record for the school in rushing yards against Oregon State, when he just busted out 300-plus yards. It was this week last year. They're going to need, a similar performance from him. Right now, he has slightly more rushing yards than he did this time last year and more receiving yards, but on about 10 more carries. He's averaging about a third of a yard less, you know, half yard less per carry than he did last year. So you're going to want to get him going. But look at what Brandon Ayuk has been able to do this year. Over 400 rushing yards. He's been the go-to guy for Jaden Daniels. And that was the big question with this offense until the offensive line started to, you know, there were some injuries and some missing pieces here and there. The big question going in to this season was, who's going to step in for N'Keal Harry? Who's going to be that go-to receiver? Because I remember there were teams, those Jalen Strong teams, when he wasn't on the field, it felt like a completely different team. When N'Keal Harry didn't play in that bowl game, which I think was a correct decision, it felt like a completely different team. Brandon Ayuk has stepped up, and he started the year, or he ended last year strong, and now he's literally hitting the ground running. 22 receptions, 424 yards, 2 touchdowns. He's been the deep threat. He's been able to have those big plays, but he caught 9 balls against Colorado last week. Like, he was the go-to guy. At certain times, he was the offense. And now he's getting credited with, becoming semifinalists for various awards for wide receivers, and deservedly so, because he's done a tremendous job so far. And he's leading the NCAA in yards after the catch. So that's telling me, yes, they can go deep to Ayuk, and he'll take care of business. Yes, they can hit him in the intermediate, but they can also just dump it off and let him go do his thing. And that's where N'Keal Harry was so valuable last year. How many of his screens did he just flip the field and it was a 50-yard gain when it should have been a 6-yard gain? Now, Ayuk may not have the size and the physical prowess that N'Keal Harry has, but he has those big play capabilities, and he's making life easy for Jaden Daniels. They're going to need a big performance from him, I think, against a good Cal team and a good Cal defense if they want to come away being in the game and winning the game. But I feel pretty good with where ASU is at right now against Cal. I don't think Cal's as bulletproof as people may think. Now, the defense obviously has to step up. They're going to their quarterback, Chase Garbers, doesn't put the ball in harm's way very often. So they're going to have to take advantage. That, what was it, the 20 interceptions they wanted for the season? They're going to have to get a couple notches with that this week. They're going to have to flip the field, but I think it's going to be a grinded out type of game. And these are two teams, as I said, they're comfortable just being in a close game, being in a slugfest. It's going to be physical. And the offensive line's going to... Cal does have a very good defensive line. And they have some of their top players on their defense are there. Brett Johnson got a start, former Desert Vista. He's a true freshman playing. He could be in there. With a young offensive line, I anticipate that defense is going to try to come after, find the cracks in that offensive line. So those young players played really well against Michigan State. I think they played pretty well most of the Colorado game, and then at the end, whether it be exhaustion or Colorado, just knowing they could get to Daniels, that's when you saw things start to turn a little bit. So they're going to have a bounce back game. But it's kind of crazy to think, like, one of the biggest questions from last year in this offseason was, who's going to be that go-to guy? It seemed like it was going to be Brandon Ayuk, and it has. Like, that question has definitively been answered already. In games where even there wasn't much scoring, he was involved. He can have those stat lines of 4 catches, 95 yards, and one of them's a 50-yard reception. He can have that kind of stat line, but he was the target for Jaden Daniels last week. And Daniels does a really good job spreading the ball around, but it's the numbers don't lie right now. Ayuk is getting the ball, and he's doing a lot with it. So they're going to need to continue to do that. But listen, this Pac-12, it's wide open, especially in the South. I think it's just going to be a bunch of teams battling it out, 7-5, 8-4 type teams, just slugging it out. It felt like Utah was the class, and then they lost to USC after USC was on their third string quarterback. So this is going to be a week in, week out type deal where it's honestly, with a lot of these games, even the way UCLA played against Washington State, that seemed to be a chalk 'em up, like, win, no problem. Now who knows? Oregon State's usually one of those games too, but you're going to Corvallis in November. Those games get weird. Those games get really weird. So I think it's going to be an up and down season for ASU. But I think that just speaks more to the conference than ASU. You can see the wheels starting to turn for the Sun Devils. And I think they can make a big statement and a bounce back that, hey, Colorado was a flub. Here we go. If they can go and take care of business against Cal, and as I said, then they host Washington State and are at Utah, and then at UCLA and host USC. So good stuff. Special thanks to Catherine Fitzgerald and Will Bohr for joining me today. Special thanks to Devin Henry for making sure we look and sound good. The Swiss Army knife of Sports 360 AZ does it again, and he's going to have some pretty cool content coming out in the next 36 hours, 48 hours, who knows? But be on the lookout for that. It involves go-karts, and he's showing off his driving skills. It's a cool story. So with that, I'm going to go eat some lunch. It's going to be fun. This is Brad's Test Match Show. Thanks so much for tuning in.